Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this is a special show. I am recording on Tuesday, Yom Shlishi, Yud Gimel Nisan. Tonight is Bedikat Chametz. Tomorrow morning is Birkat HaChama. Tomorrow is the Fast of the Firstborns. Tonight is the Search for Chametz, and the First Statement of Nullification. Tomorrow morning is the Burning of Chametz, and the Second Statement of Nullification. The day is Erev Pesach. Tomorrow night, just tomorrow night, it's coming very soon, is the Seder. Now the point is that you'll probably be listening to this after the first day of Pesach at least. And it's very difficult for me to now project as if the first day of Pesach with the Seder and everything else is behind me. So you're getting a sort of a stream of consciousness and a whole bunch of songs, I hope, more than usual. I picked up an album today called Haggadah Shel Pesach. It has a variety of songs from the Haggadah, of festivals in general, from Hallel, and of the neshama, of the soul. The song that opened my show before my beginning shtick and before the theme song of Eitz Chaim Hi, the very opening notes, were the track of Dayenu. And I would like to talk about that first, but we have some technicalities to take care of. That's really not nice to say, because one of them is Psalm 121. But let's get this straight again. It is Yom Shlishi, Tuesday, Yud Gimel Nisan, 13th of Nisan, 5769, April 7th. April 8th, as I have said in the past, is the date, Wednesday, April 8th, for Birkat HaChama every 28 years during the 20th century and the 21st century. In the 19th century, the date was Wednesday, April 7th. These two centuries, it stays the same. In the 22nd century, the date for Birkat HaChama will be Wednesday, April 9th. It's the nature of the calendar and the relationship between the Julian calendar and the Gregorian calendar, and the particular decision that was made by our sages to use what in essence is the Julian counting for the purpose of Birkat HaChama, and therefore there will be an ever-increasing discrepancy between the date of the actual vernal equinox and the one that is established for calculation purposes for the blessing that we will be saying tomorrow morning. If that was understood, fine. I don't really mean to confuse you. It just happens by accident. Sometimes I get carried away on a topic. But let's go back to Psalm 121, which is our psalm of choice for days when we do not say Tachanun, all the month of Nisan included. Psalm 121, Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama Alot Esa Einai El Heharim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha Adonai Tzilecha Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Acheinu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela la'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Of course, the first person that comes to my mind whenever I say Acheinu Kol Beit Yisrael is Gilad Shalit, a kidnapped and captive soldier for far too long, well over 1,000 days at this point. And when we are approaching the celebration of freedom, Pesach, its nickname is Zman Chirutenu, the time of our freedom. And as we celebrate freedom from slavery, it is extra poignant to keep in mind those Jews who are not free, those Jews who are still captive or enslaved. Interesting that one of the opening passages of the Haggadah, after the drinking of the first cup of wine and the ritual washing for karpas, piece of celery or other green vegetable, some people use potato, dipped in salt water, the pouring of the second cup, the breaking of the middle matzah, putting away part of it for afikoman, and then holding aloft the broken piece and saying in Aramaic, which was the vernacular at the time of the editing of the Haggadah, and therefore our commentaries remind us that even though the bulk of Haggadah is in Hebrew, there were a few passages in Aramaic because our sages felt it was extra important for everyone around the table to understand exactly what was being said, and therefore they switched from Hebrew to the vernacular. And therefore, we should follow suit, and when we have people at the Seder who don't understand Hebrew or Aramaic, we should read this in whatever language would be understood. That's not a bad idea for the whole Haggadah, by the way, but certainly the tip-off is when a passage was in Aramaic. We're holding the matzah that was just broken, part of which was put away for the afikoman, and this we hold aloft and say, Ho lachma anya, this is the bread of affliction. Diacholu avotona ba'ara de Mitzrayim, that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Kol dichvin yete v'yechol, kol ditzrich yete v'yifsach. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is needy, let him come and celebrate Pesach. Hoshata hocha, now we are here. L'shana haba ba'ara de Yisrael. Next year in the land of Israel. This was obviously composed when the Jewish people were still in exile, which many people still are. We in Eretz Yisrael, we in the land of Israel, in the state of Israel, do a little double take when we make the statement, Hoshata Hocha, now we are here, next year, Im Yirtzeh Hashem will be in Eretz Yisrael, because we're already here. Nonetheless, it's the text of the Haggadah, and we say it, and it behooves us to explain to the people sitting at the Seder table that this is a historical piece that was composed partially for saying when people were in exile, and we finish with Hoshata Hocha, Hoshata Avdei, now we are slaves, L'shana Haba B'nei Chorin. Kind of strange. Think about it for a moment. We're celebrating redemption, freedom from slavery and oppression. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and God took us out. That's what we're going to say shortly. But before that, and maybe because it's before that, there's two possible ways to understand this. One is the way I just mentioned, that it was composed, at least this part of Holach Ma'anya, was composed for Jews in exile, who are celebrating a redemption even while they are again in exile. And therefore they say, now, true, we are here. Hopefully next year, please God, we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we're still enslaved in some way or another. Hopefully next year, please God, we will be B'nai Chorin, free people. Side note, anecdote. My daughter mentioned B'nai Chorin at her table one Shabbat recently, and my little granddaughter, at the moment my only granddaughter, Roni, asked what B'nai Chorin are. And my daughter answered, people who are free. And she beamed, and she said, I'm free also. She meant 3 years old, but that's how Israeli kids mispronounce and have a very difficult time with the TH. Anyway, we thought it was funny. It was before her fourth birthday, which she has passed already, so she's not free anymore, nor is she three, but she is four, and I hope she doesn't pronounce it four, because she's used to being corrected, the F as in falafel to the TH, as in various and sundry words that have a TH. Where was I? So, at the point of Vehisha, of Holach Ma'anya, we're at the very, very beginning of the Seder, before the kids ask questions, before we start explaining the transition from slavery to freedom, and we make a statement that could be, was composed for exile. We are now still here, and next year we'll be in Israel. We're now slaves, and next year we'll be free. It could also mean that in the annual reliving of the experience, because we say towards the end of the Magid part of the Haggadah, Bechol dor vodor, in every generation, Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim, a person has to see himself as if he himself came out of Egypt, and therefore, at this very early stage in the Haggadah, before the reliving of the Exodus, we are still slaves, and we are still in Egypt, and perhaps that's a double meaning of this opening Aramaic statement of Hoshata Hocha and Hoshata Avdei, in contrast to Lashana Haba, next year, Ba'ara di Yisrael, and next year, B'nai Chorin. I almost forgot, actually, to tell you the truth, behind the scenes, I put this recording on pause to try to remember why I started this whole business, and then I remembered, so you did not notice how long it took me to reconstruct my thoughts because of that pause, but here it is. We were talking about Gilad Shalit and other Jews who are still in captivity and or enslaved and oppressed wherever they are, and we say that prayer all the time of Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, and we hope that they will emerge from darkness to light and from slavery to freedom and from troubled times to comfortable times. And it has a particular meaning when it comes to the Seder experience. By the way, I really shouldn't say by the way because it's not. It's a major point as well. There has been an ongoing dispute, or at least a questioning, as to the significance of celebrating Passover and the freedom that it represents when times are bad and people are not free. And in other words, There is a school of thought that goes back to the time of the Babylonian exile who said, look, while the Beit HaMikdash stood for its 410 years, and even before that, since we came into Eretz Yisrael, a total of 480 years plus 410, so we're talking almost 900 years earlier, we celebrated Pesach, and that makes a lot of sense. And, in fact, there was a definite school of thought that said that Pesach should be somehow suspended during periods of exile. The conclusion, the majority, ruled against that and said Pesach is always going to be a joyous celebration of freedom. Sometimes it's going to be a celebration of freedom which we are still enjoying. Sometimes it's going to be a celebration of freedom that gave birth to the Jewish nation, and unfortunately, we are not currently celebrating our own freedom, but Emir Tzashem, looking forward to the future, that will come also. It is both. There's actually a drash on a passage early on in the Haggadah where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hare ani kiven shivim shana, I am like a man of 70. Strange terminology, and the standard explanation is he was not 70, he happened to be a young fellow of 18, according to the Talmud, who was elevated to the position of Nasi, head of the Sanhedrin, the equivalent of the president of Israel. And at such a young age, his main fear was that older members of Sanhedrin would not show respect to him and not follow what he said. A miracle happened, says the Talmud, and his hair went white overnight, and his countenance became that of an older person, and therefore, he says, I am like a 70-year-old man. But what does he say? V'lo zachiti sheteyomer yetziat Mitzrayim balelot. I did not understand why we should mention yetziat Mitzrayim at night, and this is a reference to the third passage of Shema, but I'm getting too far afield, so let's not go there. Anyway, the drash that I'm referring to says that he is a 70-year person. This is not the mainstream interpretation of that passage, but it's an interesting point if we refer to leilot, night times, as periods of exile, and daytime as periods of freedom. So the issue is sort of like a double meaning. Do we say things about Yetziat Mitzrayim, specifically the passage that contains Tzitzit, the third passage of Shema? Does that belong at nighttime? And more to our point, does the whole recounting of the Exodus and the celebration of freedom apply even when things are dark in night? And the answer is yes, they do. They apply at night, they apply in day, they apply in good times as well as bad times, or bad times as well as good times. And as the conclusion of that passage, even in messianic times, we still will have a fondness to remembering the events that led to the creation of the Jewish people. And that's what Pesach represents. So it's appropriate all times.
Yeah.
That song was from the Bracha Shehechianu, which we say on festivals. Specifically, it will be the first day of Pesach only, outside of Israel on the first 2 days of Pesach. The Shehechianu is said either when women light candles, or preferably when men make Kiddush. If a woman lights candles and makes the Shehechianu, the man still makes the Shehechianu at Kiddush. If a woman herself is going to be making Kiddush, she should rather hold her Shehechianu for Kiddush. Be that as it may, it's the only time on Pesach we say a Shehechianu. Sukkot, we have the first days and the last days. Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, all throughout Chanukah, Yom Ha'atzma'ut, Yom Yerushalayim. We will be right back.
I'm Rod Sterling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Pesach 5769, recorded before slightly, and listened to probably during the holiday, so it's a little off of reality or actuality, but that's the way it is. I would like to play another song now. It's a song that's been going around by internet, especially a video clip, maybe from YouTube, which has Shweki singing together with Yonatan Razel. This version that I have to play is not theirs. It's another one. It's the same melody, but it deserves a little bit of introduction first. And it is really sweeping the part of the Jewish song world, we'll say. People are falling in love with it when they hear it. The words are from a passage in the Haggadah, one that gets a certain drum roll effect, because right before we say it, we are instructed to cover the matzot at the table, the matzahs, and to lift the cup of wine. Generally, there is a clash for attention between wine and bread, or in the case of Pesach, matzah. And when the matzot are uncovered, the wine is down. When you are paying attention to the wine, you cover the matzot. That's the tradition. So at this point, the matzot are covered and the cups are lifted. We make the following statement. V'hi sha'amda lavotenu v'lanu. It is this that has stood for our ancestors and for us. Shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu l'chalotenu. For not only one has risen against us to annihilate us, referring here, I guess, to Paro, Pharaoh in Egypt, Ela shebechol dor vador omindim aleinu l'chalotenu. But in every generation they rise against us to annihilate us. Different forms, different nations, different styles, but it is an ongoing theme of Jewish history from the very, very beginning of Jewish history. And that, of course, up till this point, is not anything to celebrate and raise your cup to, except for the last phrase, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam. But the Holy One, blessed is He, rescues us from their hand. The passage right before was, Baruch Shomer Haftachato Yisrael, blessed is He who keeps His pledge to Israel. And it's something which is so fundamental and intrinsic to Jewish life, a total, complete belief that God knows what He's doing, that He has certain plans for the world and plans for the Jewish people, but an absolute faith and confidence that He will stand by us and save us, sometimes at personal cost, sometimes at very heavy cost, but no nation, no individual, no group of people who rises against the Jewish people to annihilate us will ever succeed or can ever succeed, because V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam V'hi Sha'amda. Planning on doing now for the duration of this show is have a Haggadah thought, a Pesach thought, and then a song. I don't know if I'll specifically introduce the songs. We'll just alternate until the end of the show, my speaking and a song, all in the Pesach spirit. This past Shabbat, Shabbat HaGadol, we had a Shabbaton, as we usually do, at the Israel Center. Rabbi Shalom Gold was our guest speaker. Rabbi Eddie Abramson spoke. I spoke. And it was a very full Shabbat. Sometime during the day, I came up with a thought, and I decided to hold it for Havdalah. And I told it then, first time. Did it again in a staff meeting at the Israel Center in Hebrew on Monday, and I would like to share it with you. It's a Seder thought, but it's really a Pesach thought, and it's an everything thought about Judaism. I have to build it up a little. It starts with an alphabetic link between the days of Pesach and the holidays of the Jewish calendar. It's based on an alphabetical code known as Atbash, where you link or exchange the first letter with the last letter, the second letter with the next to the last letter, the third letter with the third to the last letter, etc., etc. Which means Aleph and Tuf are linked, Bet and Shin, Gimel and Resh, Dalet and Kuf, Hey, Tzadi, Vav, Pei, Zayin, Ayin, etc. I stopped it there because this applies to the 7 days of Pesach, specifically the days of the week they fall. And there's an interesting correlation to the rest of the calendar that somebody discovered and put it like this. Aleph goes with Tuf, which means the day of the week that the first day of Pesach falls is the same as the upcoming Tisha B'Av, the day commemorating the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. First day of Pesach is Thursday. This year, Tisha B'Av will be Thursday, as will Shivasar B'Tammuz 3 weeks before. Bet, second day of Pesach, corresponds to Shin, Shavuot. The day of the week of the second day of Pesach, which is Friday this year, Shavuot will be a Friday. Yom Yerushalayim happens to be the same 1 week earlier. Gimel, third day of Pesach, this year is Shabbat. Resh, Rosh Hashanah, and Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret, will all be Shabbat this year. And it keeps going on like that. Dalid corresponds to Kuf, which is Kinyan Torah, or Kriyat HaTorah, which is Simchat Torah, referring specifically to the Simchat Torah of the diaspora the day later. He goes to Tzadi, which is Tzom, which is Yom Kippur. Vav goes to Pei, the previous Purim. Also Lag Ba'Omer works the same. And Zayin goes to Ayin Atzma'ut, Yom Ha'atzma'ut. The day of the week that the seventh day of Pesach falls this year will be a Wednesday. Yom Ha'atzma'ut will be a Wednesday as well. Now, all of that was background to show the links between the days of the week of Pesach and the rest of the calendar. Chanukah is conspicuously missing, by the way, because there are variables in the calendar that affect the day of the week that Chanukah begins, so it can't link neatly with the days of Pesach, but all the other dates fit. Aleph, Tuf. Pesach, Tisha B'Av. Very different. One commemorating freedom from Egyptian oppression and the Exodus, and the birth of the nation, the other commemorating the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. But there are common features. One symbolic common feature is the egg. On the Seder plate, we have an egg which represents the Korban Chagiga, a festive offering in the temple, which we don't have today, and therefore the egg, which is a mourner's food, symbolizes and is Zecher Lechurban Beit HaMikdash, commemorative of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So too, the meal right before Tisha B'Av is a meager meal consisting of a piece of bread, some water, and an egg. Again, mourner's food. So far, we've got the alphabetical link of Aleph and Tuf, and we have the symbolic link of an egg, and that's no big deal. But here is maybe something that is a big deal. Who are the villains of Pesach's story? Remember, we don't only celebrate the Exodus, we commemorate slavery and its transition to freedom. The villains of the Pesach story are Lavan for his deceit of Yaakov and Paro, Pharaoh. The villains of Tisha B'Av would be Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians and the Romans and the individuals and the armies and the nations that were responsible for the physical destruction of the Beit HaMikdash each time, and the exile of the people. But each holiday has another villain, and I use the word villain in quotation marks this time, or inverted commas if you prefer. And I don't mean to be as harsh using this word as I feel no qualms about using it with the likes of Lavan and Paro and Nebuchadnezzar, etc. I am referring to ourselves. There is a Medrash Peliah, a wondrous Medrash in a collection of Midrashim. A very short, simple, powerful statement. Omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, said, Atem Mechartem et Yosef. You sold your brother Joseph into slavery, Egyptian slavery. Chayechem, I swear by your lives, says God, that every single year you will recite Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro in Egypt. We could blame it on Lavan, we could blame it on Paro. We have to take some of that blame, because the blame belongs to the hatred among brothers, the plot to kill a brother, Yosef, which was altered to just throw him into a pit, which was altered again to take him out and sell him to a passing caravan, and to go to their father, Yaakov, and say Yosef was killed, and here is his bloody coat to prove it. A terrible, terrible act, which according to this Medrash is why we suffered Egyptian exile and oppression and slavery. What we're hoping for in Pesach is not just commemorating once upon a time, a long time ago, this is what happened. But on Pesach, we are talking about the first Geula, the first redemption, and the future redemption, the complete redemption. And that will happen when we pull our act together and uproot from within ourselves the sinat achim, hatred of Jew against Jew, the sinat chinam, the gratuitous hatred. That's exactly the Tisha B'Av story. The second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of hatred between Jews, intolerance between Jews, among Jews. And we will continue mourning the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash until we bring about the building of the Beit HaMikdash, the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash and Jerusalem, by Ahavat Achim, love of brothers, and Ahavat Chinam, free, gratuitous, uncomplicated love of brothers. That's the trick. It's the Pesach trick, and it's the Tisha B'Av trick, symbolized by the egg for both, by the alphabetical connection Aleph to Tuf, but more from the fact that the Geula Shlema is being withheld from us, both from the perspective of Pesach, when we say Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim HaBenuya, next year and rebuilt Jerusalem, and from the Tisha B'Av perspective of continuing to mourn the destruction rather than celebrate the rebuilding of Yerushalayim in its full context and spiritual qualities. That, I think, is a significant connection between Pesach and Tisha B'Av, and a significant goal for our Pesach thinking.
Oh, no, I'm not going to be able to do it.
So much for my plan of alternating a Dvar Torah with another musical track. I think I speak too long and too much, but if you're listening, that's what Torah Tidbits is or are. Torah Tidbits audio, the written Torah Tidbits, the printed, etc. In any event, let me leave you with my wishes for a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a kosher and happy Pesach. There are some people who take the kosher to an extreme, which per se is not bad, but it impacts on a markedly reduced joyful Pesach, and that's needs work. And there are people that grab onto the happy Passover, happy Pesach, and are not too meticulous about the details, which you have to be also. I have this memory when I took my mother, Aleha Shalom, once shopping back in the old country. We were in Waldbaum's, and because I had a kippah, this woman pushing a overflowing shopping cart came over to ask us an important question. She had in her hand two jars of horseradish, and she wanted to know which one had a more reliable rabbinic supervision for kosher for Passover. As we were answering the question, I glanced at her wagon, and the main item in her basket was a large, non-kosher butterball turkey. There are people who do Pesach, do not necessarily have a kosher Pesach, but feel important to have a happy Pesach. I am not now saying, if you don't do one, don't bother doing the other. I am saying that the greeting of have a happy and kosher Pesach was meant to address the fact that we have to be meticulous with the kosherness of Pesach, and we have to also be meticulous with the joy of Pesach. Chag Kosher V'Sameach, Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameach.